Back in 2012, I preached a message with the same title as the one I'm doing today, Preparing for the Election. That was a dozen years ago, 2012. And at that time, the nation was $16 trillion in debt. Oh, for the good old days when we were only $16 trillion in debt. Now we're $36 trillion in debt. Imagine adding $20 trillion to the debt over the course of 12 years. What does that project out to be? I can't imagine. At that time, we were not talking really too much, if I remember right, about the woke agenda. Same-sex marriage was not legal across the United States. Very few of us were talking about gender transition or AI or BLM or DEI. Donald Trump was just this crazy guy who had his own TV show. And nobody, very few people at least, even had heard of Kamala Harris. Well, of course, things have really drastically changed over the last 12 years. Our emphasis as a church, of course, is not on the political or even on current events. The primary message of the New Testament is salvation through Jesus Christ and what it means to know the Lord and to follow Him and to serve Him. That's our main message. Our main message is not political. Ours is a moral and a religious and a biblical message, not primarily political. However, the Bible does talk about government and the responsibility of citizens to government. The Bible lays down a moral code that we can apply to our political decisions. Christianity has political consequences or implications. Christians should vote, and I believe they should vote in a certain way, that is, in a way that's consistent with biblical and moral values. Well, of course, we know that the election is only 2 days away, and many of us probably have already voted. I've already voted, and probably some of you have, and maybe some of you will vote either tomorrow or the next day. If you've been paying attention over the last few months, you know that the candidates for president and, of course, the candidates for the other offices differ significantly. One of the things that candidates typically try to do is show how they are different from the other people, how they're better than the other candidates. Well, we certainly know that there are differences among the candidates. And I'm not going to tell you whom to vote for, but I would like to talk about the biblical values and the Christian principles that we ought to be concerned about. These principles ought to influence how we vote. Of course, as a pastor, I'm mostly concerned about moral values, biblical values. Now, there are other concerns in the election, things like finances and foreign policy and all kinds of things like that that are important and we ought to take them into consideration. But today I want to talk about moral values, biblical values, and how the candidates will either support or undercut those biblical values. So how should we as Christians evaluate our options, these issues that are before us and the candidates and what they represent? How do we vote? What moral issues or moral principles should we focus on when considering which candidates to vote for? Well, I think there are several things that we ought to consider. The first thing I think that we consider in a candidate is reputation for integrity. Which candidate seems to be the most honest, who has the better personal inner character? Now, I admit that politics is dirty business and that politicians are often not high character people. It's hard for me to believe that anybody running for presidential office or almost any office today has a high degree of personal character and personal integrity. Most of the candidates, it seems like, make promises that they either have no intention of carrying out and fulfilling or that they can't. And so oftentimes politicians will say whatever they think they need to say to get elected. Still, we certainly hope that our candidates have some inner personal character. The Bible teaches that when the wicked rule, the people mourn. Have you ever felt like mourning and being sorrowful because of the government officials that we have? I feel that way often. A wicked person, a person with bad personal character, should be disqualified from leadership. And it wasn't all that long ago that if a person who is running for especially presidential office, if he was found to have a moral problem, oftentimes that would eliminate him from running for president. But that's not the way it is anymore. We don't expect anybody to be perfect, but I would certainly rather vote for someone with good personal character. How would we discern whether that person has good character? Well, does the person keep his word? I think that's a very important thing. Is the person reliable? Do they tell the truth? What is the candidate's track record regarding the vows he has taken and the promises that he's made? Has he kept his vows? Has he kept his promises? One of the most major and significant promises or vows that any of us take is marriage. Does the person that we're thinking about, the candidate, does he or she keep his or her marriage vows? If these people don't keep their oaths and their promises, well, frankly, then they're just not trustworthy. And as I said, many politicians are not trustworthy. They just say what they need to say to get elected. But for Christians, integrity matters. Personal character matters. We realize that politicians, for the most part, are not reliable, honest people. They often lack basic integrity. We should be very skeptical about the politicians that we think about or support or vote for. We might think that they're better than the other guy, but in reality, many of these are not good people to begin with. They often deceive us and disappoint us. We cannot often trust these people, and we would be foolish and gullible to think that politicians will keep their word. They often don't. They often don't plan to keep their word. And I often find it laughable when I see these political advertisements saying, "Trust me as your candidate for office. You can trust so-and-so." And I find that laughable. Any of us who've been observing the government over the last several years, would we say, "Oh, yes, I trust the government"? What is Ronald Reagan? You remember what he said, the nine most terrifying words in the English language. "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." Well, we've learned not to trust our government in many respects. Do you trust the FBI? Do you trust the Department of Justice? Do you trust the health officials, this man who's parading as a woman in high government offices? Do you trust that person to tell you the truth regarding health issues? I certainly don't. So we should take everything that these people say with a big grain of salt, recognizing that as politicians, they will often try to deceive. They will often not tell the truth. And we would be foolish to be gullible enough to trust these people to do what they say that they're going to do. In the current presidential race, just to be frank, neither side, if we want to be honest, has a good reputation for integrity and personal character. Neither side is particularly reliable, honest, or truthful. I would say that neither side has kept their vows or their promises in many instances. And so each of us will have to decide which of the candidates we think is more honest or has better personal integrity, or maybe going into the future, which one will have greater levels of trust and confidence that we could put into that person. Many candidates are deeply compromised when it comes to personal character and integrity. You don't have to scratch very deep to find the lack of character, lack of integrity in these people. But we do have to vote for somebody, and we should pick the person we think has the greater integrity or is more trustworthy or we think is going to actually keep his or her promises. Another very important issue beyond that is sanctity of life. The most important duty that a government has is to protect the lives of the innocent. Civil authorities must use their power to defend those who are too weak to defend themselves. And who is more innocent or vulnerable than a baby in the womb? Of all the people on the face of the earth, that little baby before it's born is the most innocent and vulnerable of all. And human life is made in the image of God. It is of eternal value. And so the sanctity of human life is a biblical principle that teaches us that all human life at every stage of development and every condition of life is valuable. God is the one who gives life. We get our life from Him. He's the only one who has the right to take innocent human life. And so we should support only those who want to protect human life, I would believe, from conception to the grave. Now, where do the candidates stand on these issues? And I think all of us probably, if we are aware of anything, we recognize where the candidates differ on the issue of the sanctity of life. Almost every single Democratic candidate for office is staunchly pro-abortion. They are firmly, radically committed to the unrestricted practice of murdering babies in the womb right up until the moment of birth. And I would suggest that there are some who think it's okay to murder that child even after it is born. And they would prefer to have the American taxpayer, like you and me, pay for it. They claim that abortion is a fundamental right, just like the right to free speech or the free press or the freedom of religion. Abortion rights is their one big issue. And it's been amazing to me to see this year particularly how they advertise themselves as supporters of abortion. Do you remember with Bill Clinton, some of us are old enough to remember Clinton and how they used to advertise it. They kind of whispered about abortion and tried to use it, speak of it in other terms. They wanted it to be legal, safe, and rare. Well, there's no more rareness about it. There's no more speaking kind of in hushed tones about this. They are promoting it as a good. They think that killing that child or having the right to kill that child is a moral good. Now, what does Isaiah say about calling good evil and evil good? That's a sign of corruption. That's a sign of a total lack of moral virtue. And so on this issue, and others as well, the Democrats are against God. They're against the Bible. They're against the church, the family, and even the welfare of the country. They are against common sense and against basic moral standards. They are promoting, not just tolerating, not just allowing, they are promoting the culture of death. And I believe that if the Democrats gain control over the government, they will push through their legislation to make unrestricted abortion possible and legal in every part of the United States of America. Sadly, some of the candidates that we would expect to be more solidly, more staunchly pro-life have compromised on this issue. They're not consistently and strongly pro-life. They're better on that issue than the other side. They're far and away better than the other side, but they're not as good as we would hope for them to be. If any one candidate is aggressively pro-abortion, and the other is even mildly pro-life, well, then we vote for the person who's more pro-life. We must support the candidate who has the better position on this issue. I believe that no Christian should vote for any candidate who supports and encourages and promotes abortion, no matter what other policy positions that person might have. Abortion is murder, in my understanding. It's a clear-cut moral issue. We should vote for the candidate who is better on this issue. It may be that we can't find a candidate who is perfect on that issue, but at least we can find one who's better. The choice between good and evil is obvious and stark this year. Then there's the issue of marriage, family, and gender. The very first institution established by God was the human family. It's rightly composed of one man and his wife and their children. This is the biblical pattern that Jesus recognized and the one that Christians should emulate. We're all aware of changes in society, and especially in the realm of the home and the family. Today, the normal home and family seems to be more and more rare and unusual. Many couples today, of course, are living together without being married. People are having children without being married. People are living in single-parent families. These are very common things these days. Homosexuality and transgenderism now have a huge influence on society. What used to be considered marginal, sort of different and odd and unusual, countercultural, these kind of behaviors are becoming more and more acceptable. The most depraved people and their wicked behaviors are coming out of the closet and parade around in their depravity for all to see. Well, we as Christians are supposed to be salt and light in this culture. We must stand against the ungodly pressure, the ungodly influence of this ungodly world. We must uphold and support and defend what is good and beautiful and true. We must stand up for biblical morality. We must maintain high moral standards, not cave in or capitulate to the ungodly spirit of this age. Christians should not support candidates who are promoting the LGBT lifestyle or agenda. The family is the foundation of the country. As the traditional family becomes weaker, I believe that the whole nation becomes weaker. We should support only those candidates who promote strong traditional family values. The Bible is clear on all these issues of the whole LGBT lifestyle. We know that what the Bible says about proper relationships and proper families. We know that it's a fact of nature that there are only two sexes. That's how God made us. We know that it's impossible to transition from one sex to the other. Anyone who denies this biblical truth is not worthy of our vote. The candidates we support must be against the LGBT agenda. We have to tell the truth. There is such a thing as reality. And for those who violate reality and pretend against reality, they must not get our support. A man cannot become a woman, no matter how he dresses, no matter what surgeries he has, no matter what chemicals he puts into his body. A man is a man, and a woman is a woman. No government should force us to pretend otherwise. We must stand strongly against the homosexual agenda and same-sex marriage. We must stand against other similar ideas like polygamy and adultery and transgenderism, all sorts of disordered relationships. I would want a candidate to be against such things, not in support of them. I would want to be supporting a candidate who is against the trans agenda, those who are promoting or grooming little children for the LGBT agenda, and also against pornography in public. We should not tolerate biological males competing against females in sports. We should not accept it as normal when men invade private spaces intended for women and girls. We should not tolerate it when people claim that they can transition from one sex to the other. Sadly, in the national political parties in these contests, one party supports, upholds, and defends the very opposite of what Christianity teaches on these issues. I would call this the Romans 1 platform, because if you know what Romans 1 talks about and the sinfulness that it is condemning there, it seems like one particular party is advancing and promoting and supporting all the things that God says is wrong in that passage in Romans chapter 1. They are on record for hostility toward or against God's order on these issues. And so we shouldn't vote for a candidate who supports, defends, and promotes what God condemns. Then there's the rule of law. The Bible clearly teaches that all civil authorities exist to protect law-abiding citizens and to punish criminals. Government exists to promote what is good and to punish what is evil. We don't believe in tyrants or dictators or autocrats, people who think that they're above the law somehow. We believe that every citizen is equal before the law, and that the law applies to everyone equally. Christians then ought to support those candidates who want to apply the law equally and fairly to everyone, irrespective of color or gender or education or wealth. We don't want to give, or we shouldn't allow, preferential treatment to one group of people simply based on their color or their background or their education. Those candidates who ignore the law when it suits them are not worthy of our vote. We should support candidates who promise to be tough on crime, not those who promise to be lenient on criminals. We should vote for those candidates that seem most likely to respect the law and make good laws for the nation. And the laws that these people propose should be in keeping with Christian values, Christian morality. There's a higher law than just the law of the land. There's the law that God gives us, and we would hope that the laws that people make are in keeping with God's higher law. Then there's respect for property. The Bible says, "Thou shalt not steal." And the implication of that is that we have the right to own, to possess, to gain for ourselves property, especially when it comes to the basics of life, food, clothing, and shelter. Government, in part, exists to protect our property and the right to own it. They have the responsibility of protecting us and also punishing those who have tried to take what they have no right to. Although the Bible condemns greed and materialism, wealth itself is not immoral. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, not money itself. Money we can use for good or bad purposes. And likewise, wealth, a person can use his or her wealth for good or bad purposes. It's not the wealth that's the problem, it's the person and what he or she wants to do with that money. Government should not get in the way of a person accumulating wealth, especially in our context in the United States. If a person behaves himself and follows the rules and works hard, he can usually attain at least a middle-class lifestyle, and the government should not get in the way of that. Government behaves immorally when it confiscates our assets through high taxes on income, estates, or wealth. Government has the right to tax, obviously, but it should not use its authority to go beyond what is reasonable. The government often exceeds legitimate authority by overtaxing and overspending. But the government should enable and promote prosperity and should not be confiscating our rightly earned wages. Christians should support candidates who refuse to make the government an agent of confiscation and redistribution. Government confiscation of assets through unreasonably high taxes amounts to theft. And so if there's a party or a candidate who ignores the destruction of property and who promises higher taxes or who wants to confiscate our property, we should not vote for those people. If a party or candidate claims to be socialist or even communist, obviously that would be against the private ownership of property, and we need to be against such persons. The government is responsible to protect us from those who would confiscate or destroy our property. If the candidate will not protect personal property rights, then he or she should not get our vote. If the candidate wants to take our property or redistribute wealth or tax us unreasonably, he should not receive our vote. The next one is personal responsibility. Personal responsibility. God holds able-bodied people responsible for their own welfare. He expects mature people of every station in life to earn a living. If one does not want to work, then the Bible says he should not want to eat or not expect to eat. We should not expect the government to provide for us when we can provide for ourselves. Now, there are cases, in the case, for example, of dire poverty or abuse or illness or disasters, God has ordained institutions like the family and the church and the government as agents of support for those who can't support or help themselves. We admit that some people cannot provide for themselves through various situations in life. I believe at least that the government can step in from time to time with what they call a social safety net. There are people who the government probably, if nobody else is there to support them, sure, the government can step in and help people who need that kind of help. But the government is not primarily responsible to just give people stuff or pay off their debts. Government programs often do not hold people accountable for their bad activity and actions. They reward bad behavior. They reward those who should be punished or penalized. Our government has slowly transitioned over the years to a welfare state or a nanny state where they want to take care of everything. In fact, government today enables, rewards, and encourages immoral, reckless behavior. And so Christians should support those candidates who don't want to increase or expand the government's role in providing for people who should be providing for themselves. We should be looking for smaller and leaner government that doesn't reward bad behavior. If people are capable of supporting themselves, well, then the government should not be providing for them, except perhaps in cases of emergency or disasters or catastrophes. And frankly, as I look at the candidates and the parties, I am not very hopeful that any candidate, or at least not many of the prominent candidates, are really going to do much of anything about government spending. They promise all kinds of new programs, and they don't really promise or give an explanation of where the money is going to come from. And that has put us in the situation where now we have $36 trillion worth of debt, and that just keeps on piling up. And it doesn't seem to matter so much who's in government authority. Both the Republicans and the Democrats seem to spend like a drunken sailor, which is very unfortunate. Then there's the responsible management of nature. Maybe this is one that we don't think of very often, but it is, I think, a biblical principle, because God gave humans dominion. The Bible tells us in the very first chapters of Genesis that God made the earth for man, and he said, go and subdue it. That word subdue means to control, to bring order to something. It's proper for us to develop and to use creation in order to bring it to order to provide benefits for us as humans. God made creation for us. Now, I don't think that means that we exploit or ruin creation. We can use the resources of creation without ruining the place. We are responsible, admittedly, for an awful lot of pollution, which is very sad. In some places we know where people are not following biblical principles of management, humans have made a huge mess of the place in many places around the world. As a lover of nature, I hate pollution. One of the things that galls me to no end is when I'm out fishing at a place that should be just pristine and beautiful, and I find a bunch of trash laying around. And I try to pick up other people's trash because it just doesn't belong out there in a beautiful place where nature should be admired and appreciated for its beauty. And so I don't like, pollution. I'm in favor of Conservation of resources. I appreciate cleanup efforts. I like land and water and air that is clean. And so we ought to protect and retain the beauty of the earth. However, I'm not persuaded that human activity is radically affecting certain aspects of life on earth, like the climate. I do not believe that we can control the climate. Extreme environmentalists, I think, take the wrong viewpoint on that issue. And so myself, I would want to support candidates who recognize that we can use the creation properly and responsibly without wrecking it. God made the earth for us, and so I think we use the resources of the earth responsibly. Christians should not, I don't believe, endorse extreme environmentalism. And then finally, recognition of Israel. Now again, maybe that's not one of the main ideas that comes to mind, but I think that is a biblical principle. God has promised to bless those who bless Israel. That comes in the Abrahamic covenant. I will bless him who blesses thee, is what God said to Abraham. And of course, Israel is Abraham's family. And so when we bless Israel, we are doing what God has said. To earn a blessing, we bless the people of Abraham. And the United States has been, well, it's not a consistent track record with its relationship with the Jewish people. I understand that there are more Jews living in America than are in the whole rest of the world. And I'm not saying that everything that Israel does as a nation is good or perfect or wise, but I think we do support Israel when we can, to the extent we can. I think Israel as a nation is the only democratic ally that America has in that whole realm or in that whole area of the world. So I think it's wise for us to maintain a good relationship with Israel. It's not that we don't see some of the wrong things that they may do, but all in all, if we can, we try to support Israel. And so we should support those candidates that support Israel. We don't support immoral or evil actions, but we do support the nation of Israel as much as we can because God blesses those who bless his people, his chosen people, Israel. Now, as you look at those, that list of eight characteristics or eight biblical principles that we can consider when we make a vote, do any of the candidates in the upcoming election, would they all have the same viewpoint? Just, I guess if I speak for myself, are there any candidates who have the same position on all these issues as I do? Highly unlikely. I mean, I don't know the positions of all the candidates on all the issues. There are some who are more in that track of thinking than what others are. But clearly, it's highly unusual or unlikely that you're going to find, especially a presidential candidate, who has all the right policies or all the right stands or positions on all these issues. Probably, if anybody did promote or support all the same things I just talked about, they would never be electable, because there are too many people in our world who are against all these issues and principles. So then, can we just not vote for any candidates because they don't affirm exactly what we would affirm? Well, there may be cases. I'm not saying that that pertains right now, but there may be cases where we as Christians would say, I cannot vote because there's no candidate that upholds the most significant issues that Christians ought to be upholding and supporting. Now, frankly, that's not the case this time, but I think we could look into the future to say there may be a time when I can't, in good conscience, vote for any of these, let's say, presidential candidates or maybe a candidate for Senate or Congress. They just support so many things that I am absolutely against, and I can't vote for them. But practically speaking, we should vote for those candidates who uphold most or at least some of these principles. Of course, there's no perfect candidate, just like there's no perfect person. And so we may not be able to look at the candidate and say they uphold and support all the same issues that I do. It's highly unlikely that we're going to find a person like that. But we can find a person who says, well, mostly, or at least on the major topics, the major issues, we're on the same side. We both promote Christian values. We are fortunate that some of the candidates running for office claim to uphold some of these biblical values. So we ask ourselves then, which candidate is more likely to uphold and support what is good? Which is more likely to reduce evil? Perhaps through our vote we can prevent a candidate from being elected. For example, we might vote for one because the alternative is so bad. I would guess that people voted in the 2016 election, many of them voted for Trump because they didn't like Hillary. If it came down to Hillary or Trump, they're going to vote for the better of the two, that, or maybe even vote against the one that they really don't want in office. That sometimes happens. An interesting incident happened recently at the rallies for both the candidates. This has been in the news, and you've probably heard it before. At the Harris rally, someone shouted out, "Jesus is Lord." And Harris replied, "You must be at the wrong rally." In other words, that assertion that Jesus is Lord did not belong at a Democratic rally for president. And if you look at their party platform, you would have to conclude that they are the anti-Jesus party, because they affirm everything that God denies, or it seems that way. At a rally where J.D. Vance was speaking, someone shouted, "Jesus is King." And Vance replied, "That's right, Jesus is King." And so what happened at those two rallies, I think, gives us a little bit of an insight into where the parties stand. One party affirms Jesus as King, at least in their rhetoric, at least in what they say, maybe not so much in their personal lives, but at least in what they say, they affirm that Jesus is King, Jesus is Lord, while the other party absolutely denies it. And I think that should have an influence in how we vote. I've heard the statistics that they're expecting around 32 million Christians not to vote in this upcoming election. My understanding, in the last election, Trump lost by about 40,000 votes total over the course of just several states. 32 million they're expecting not to vote this year. If even a fraction of that actually voted, the outcome of the election would be very sure. I find that number to be shocking, especially when the election will likely turn on just several thousand votes. We don't have a presidential candidate who holds all our moral values, but we have the option of voting for someone who upholds most of them, and we have the option of voting against someone who denies them, who absolutely is hostile against them. So I believe we are responsible to vote. It's part of our stewardship as citizens. If we don't vote, it's essentially like voting for bad government. We cannot abdicate our responsibility. Not voting is a failure of Christian stewardship. And just to be very specific and blunt, we cannot vote for a candidate that supports abortion or the homosexual agenda or transgender rights or ignoring criminal behavior. No Christian should vote for those upholding, supporting, and defending clear immorality. Our vote should show support for what God loves and our opposition of what God hates. So the vote is coming up. Some of us have already voted. I have. This is an exceedingly important election. And you probably know that we live in a swing state that could swing either way. There are several like that, that just getting the vote out is very important. And so the election will come down, I think, to a handful of votes in each district. And so I hope you'll make every effort to get to the polls and exercise your right to vote, and vote in light of Christian values. Well, let's close in prayer.